Hello, and welcome to Living with Dying, the podcast where we try to break the taboos around death and dying and learn to talk about it. Thank you if you've been listening since the beginning, and if you have, you'll know we've covered so many aspects of death and dying, from what it's actually like to die, to how it feels to lose your nearest and dearest, the different ways grief can strike, the different ways we cope or don't with loss, how counselling can help, what part faith can play, how to help others going through grief, and how to pick up the pieces and rebuild a life after a big loss. I'm in Windsor today interviewing Micah Gomes-Axma of Lodge Brothers, who's a funeral arranger here, but also has a long story to tell herself about her life. And you've experienced a lot of losses, I'm sorry to say, haven't you, Micah?
I have indeed. I have gone through a series of miscarriages, early stage miscarriages, but nonetheless, to me, they were my babies. So, and I've lost 10 in 8 pregnancies.
10?
Yes. 2 were twins because we went for IVF. So we knew that they were twins, and sadly that didn't take either. So.
And how many years did you say that was?
Oh gosh, across a period of over a decade.
Gosh, so, that must take a lot of strength to go through all that, let alone get over it all.
I'm quite pragmatic. Doesn't mean I'm not emotional, but I am quite pragmatic. And my husband and I were hoping to have children, so we just kept trying. So, and until I got into my 40s, and that's basically the point where we start, okay, maybe this is time to give up. But we tried for a long time, and yeah, sadly without success.
Can you remember the feelings that were around when you decided to give up?
It's double. It's very double feeling, because on the one hand, you really want to have a child and you want to keep trying. And on the other hand, you get to a point where you have to be realistic. I'm in my 40s, you know, if I keep trying, then, you know, what is the result? I'm going to get more pain from losing them, you know, after eight pregnancies and not succeeding. How likely is it that it will still do it? And also, you get to a point in your life where I had early menopause, and, you know, at what point are you going to give in to that? So we consciously made the decision to stop trying. So, but it was, yeah, it was difficult. It was quite hard.
And going back to each loss, I mean, did the first one would have been absolutely devastating?
The first one was a complete surprise, because I didn't realise I was pregnant. I just had this funny thing going on, went to my GP and asked what's going on. And she quite blank, because I wasn't married at the time, very blatantly told me, oh, you've had a miscarriage and it's probably for the best. Oh. And that comment really stung.
Yeah.
So it's from her culture, you should be married, and from my culture, you know, it's fine. You know, it's entirely up to the person whether you're married or not. So, and that really stung, that comment. I think the comment was more a shock than realizing that I'd been pregnant, because it hadn't been planned and it'd been so early. It literally was in the first few weeks, and it's interesting, because you go through an event of loss, but it's different things you may respond to rather than the loss itself. So,
such as
that comment from the doctor that was very uncomfortable. And I've had it at a different point as well. Our last miscarriage, which was the furthest where we got to 5.5 weeks, and we had a different GP, not our usual GP, and we went in. It's like, oh, we're pregnant. Oh, that's nice. Were you planning to? And that's after we'd gone through 2 bouts of IVF, and this was a natural pregnancy. And so it does make you feel sometimes that other people don't understand. However, I have learned that, you know, I'm not the only one who's gone through this. There's lots of people going through this. And if you find those people, you can kind of help each other. So I found, in my case, I had a an acquaintance who'd gone through the same thing, and talking to her did make a difference. It did help a bit. I think it helped me more than it helped her. So, and I know that I reacted to the whole situation differently from her. She kept trying. She did succeed in the end, but she found. She told me when she told me she was pregnant, she was very hesitant in telling me. Oh. And she was very surprised by my reaction because I was genuinely happy for her. That's more from my nature. I try to look at the positives. And I had something like, well, just because I can't have it, because it doesn't work for me, doesn't mean I can't be genuinely happy for someone else. And she admitted that she did struggle being happy for others. So that's it, everybody's different in how they react.
Sounds like you have a very generous nature.
I suppose. So my husband says I do. So,
and can we just stay a bit longer on the miscarriages? Did you notice the loss felt different at all as you got on through them?
Yeah, I think by the time we went through the last pregnancy, which came after the IVF and was a natural one, we got to about 5.5 weeks, and we were really scared of becoming enthusiastic. We were so, because of the previous experiences, we were quite scared, and so we didn't really dare to be happy about it. And then, of course, at 5.5 weeks, I lost that one, and we were devastated, but we, at the same time, we had expected it. So, and that's kind of, I think, that you get in, if this is something that continues, if you've had a few experiences like these, you kind of start to anticipate that it may go wrong again. And I know that from other people as well who've gone through it. And when they fall pregnant, they daren't hope, they daren't look forward to it until they have the baby in their arms. So
you kind of edit your emotions to make sure it doesn't hurt.
You start controlling that, and you don't allow yourself those expectations. So
I can't begin to compare myself with you, but I did have one miscarriage before I had a family, and I remember one of the worst things was seeing baby things everywhere. It seemed like whenever I left the house, there were people with buggies. Yeah. Or shops full of baby clothes. I found that really hard.
Yeah, when you go to hospital, for example, you still see posters about could you be pregnant, and I still look at those like, I don't really want to see those. So I'm happy for someone else, but I don't really want to be confronted with them. And you still get that. That continues. So I just try to focus on more positive things. I think one of the things where I'm very, very lucky, my husband, because as a woman, you expect it to be affected by miscarriage. Everybody knows that, you know, it will somehow affect you. But it'll affect the husband as well, the father. My husband actually, after we lost the second set of twins that we had for IVF, he ended up with tinnitus.
Oh, okay.
So he had a physical reaction to his grief. And I've always felt that my husband took it much harder. He's more emotionally, he's very much emotionally in touch with himself. He is more emotional than I am. I'm the pragmatic one. So, and I know a lot of people also, because they don't realise the other half may feel similar emotions, it can cause a lot of tension in between couples. For us, we seem to have done the reverse. We've become stronger together. And I feel very fortunate with that. So, and that's what I kind of focus on as a positive. You know, my husband and I, we've become so much stronger together.
That's lovely to hear. But did he struggle with other people? Does society not really recognise fathers in miscarriages?
I think a lot of people didn't look at him as, oh, well, your wife's had a miscarriage. That's your loss as well. I think a lot of people misjudge that. And the focus with the miscarriage is on the woman, and people forget about the father. One of the things that after we lost the second set of twins, which was on our wedding anniversary.
Oh.
Of all, on our first wedding anniversary, we sat down and talked, and so we need, you know, what do we want to do further? Do we want to continue? And how are we coping with things? One of the things I asked, two of my cousins had had babies round about the same time that we lost ours. There's this thing about when you fall off a horse, you have to get back on. So I asked my husband, so can we go, because they were on the continent, can we go over and, you know, see how I am with the babies, these newborn babies who are part of our family. And we went over, we met with my cousins who knew what had happened and sat there, you know, it was quite tough the first few moments to hold this newborn baby and knowing that I, you know, that we'd lost ours. And, but it helped. It did help. And I encouraged my husband to do the same. So he sat down and he helped baby for a while as well. And I think it helped with him as well. And we've been able to sort of move on.
In what way did it help when you had the baby in your arms?
To allow myself to be happy. Just, you know, focus on someone else's happiness and allow myself to be happy that I do have this little new cousin in the family. So, and it's, yeah, because it can be difficult. It's, as you say, you walk out, you step outside, and you see this world full of prams, full of baby clothes, and you can't, you know, that's, you've lost that opportunity yourself. Yeah, for me, I found that just holding this newborn little cousin, it just made me feel a little bit warmer inside, a little bit better inside. You go through phases. Grief is like the sea. You've got waves that, you know, days where it's worse, days where you've got nothing bothering you at all. And eventually that rocky sea just starts to ease a bit more. So, and then until you get to a point where you can just, you know, you can move on, you can cope.
And how far down this calm sea are you now? How long is it since?
I think it's been more than 10 years ago since we lost the last one. And I love babies. So, and Andrew loves babies as well, my husband. So he loves children. He's great. They're really drawn to him. So, and I think we're both at a good place. We every now and then we get that little feeling like it would have been so nice, but it's a scary world out there. So sometimes I look at it as like, you know, it's a shame, but at least I don't have to worry about child being having to deal with online bullying or, you know, what happens in the world. So I don't have that worry. So again, we try to look at the positives.
And was it all your losses that drew you into the funeral business or attracted you to the funeral business?
It wasn't. It wasn't, actually. When I went to school, secondary school, one of my classmates was the daughter of a funeral arranger, a funeral director. And at the time, she was that was her dream. She wanted to become funeral director as well. And we were 14. And I was like, oh, my grief. I can't think of anything worse than dealing with dead people. That is terrifying. And just over the years, that thought of it's terrifying changed to it's part of life. And I worked in aviation for many years, and I dealt with deaths on board. I had 3 deaths, which is well above the average for any member of cabin crew throughout a career. But I had 3, and I ended up kind of becoming the onboard counsellor for people who were flying for bereavements. And I was the person who had to inform families because somebody, when the crew was working on somebody trying to save their lives, couldn't. You get to a point where you kind of want the family out of the way before you make that final decision, because that's not something they want to see. And you have to make that point of, okay, we can no longer do anything for this person. And it kind of, amongst the crew, we had to like, who's the one who's going to tell them? And I volunteered. And sat down with them, talked to them, and helped them during the flight, because it's mid-flight and you can't just get out. And it made me realise that yes, this is something I can do, something I can help. And then, in addition to that, maybe surprisingly, but Martin Clunes, the actor, years ago he did a TV series called William and Mary, and he played a funeral director. And my experiences on the aircraft and my memory of my friend in school, who was one of the most cheery persons I knew, and her father as well. And I watched this program with Martin Clunes, and that's like the way he is. He's so empathic and so kind and caring and dignified, but also showing some of the fun side. Believe it or not, funeral business has a big fun side to it. And I looked at it and I was like, if it's even half like that, that's what I want to do. And getting into the business, and I found it is exactly like that. Overall, funeral directors have a wicked sense of humour. You need to. And the job that we're doing is we're here to help people. We get people coming to us at the worst point in their lives. They've just lost somebody they loved, and we're there to help them complete that life, to give the person the right send off, and effectively help the family and the loved ones and the people who are left behind to take that first step to move on. Moving on doesn't mean forgetting, but it means moving on with your life and, taking those bits that you've taken from the person that you've lost with you, and use the positives that you've got from that. One of the things I do in my arrangements is I talk to people and I try to see what the positive things re they remember about the people. So something that makes them laugh. It's very, very rare that I have an arrangement where I haven't had the client laughing at some point, because grief comes in many shapes. Grief isn't just crying, just feeling terrible. Grief is also remembering the good times, and that is what you want to carry forward. And I think that's part of it is my nature, part of it is the job, and I think that's part of how I dealt with losing my babies as well.
And you must see grief of all different types, I
I
imagine.
see, in very, very different shapes and forms. Some people take it really to heart and struggle to move on, which is very hard to see, because you want that person to be able to take that step and to get back to themselves again. And I get people here who are very almost blasé, because that's their way of dealing with it. And some people come in and they're angry. So, and we just as arrangers, we try to help people. We kind of balance things, get them focused on planning the funeral, and that's our way of helping them. Being the funeral arranger, we're kind of like a safe place for them. They know that we do not judge people's emotions. We know that everybody deals with it differently. And I get people coming in, sometimes they come in for a while, on a regular basis. They come in every couple of weeks, or sometimes they start every day, just for a 5-minute chat, just to help them through that day. So other people you never hear from again. But whatever works for them, we welcome it.
So now tell me more about this fun side. What's this all about?
The fun side is you share these memories with people. You get people to think about something happy, something positive. Sometimes the silly questions like, what's the silliest thing you miss about the person you love? It breaks the ice. It just opens up this flood of memories, and you sit here laughing with people, genuinely, because they share their memories with you, and it kind of makes us less heavy, less focused on just the sadness. As I said, grief is a variety of emotions, and joy is a part of it, and it's joy that you want to slowly go back to. as I said, I'm pragmatic, but I'm also an optimist. I try and look at the positives. So sometimes it's little stories that people tell, something silly somebody did, somebody's hobby, and it just brings that warmth back. You keep those people with you. You don't forget them. You don't lose them just because they're gone. Physically, they're still in your heart, and that helps.
Now, I know another string to your bow is that you're an author.
I am
Does
indeed.
that have any connection with death and dying, or even with your miscarriages? Did it somehow, your creativity, flow out of your loss?
My creativity's always been there. I come from a very creative family. There's lots of various types of artists, musicians. But in my case, I, without even realizing, when I was writing my first book, which my husband had encouraged me to do, we'd already gone through a few miscarriages then, and without even thinking about it, I started putting that in the book. And I had one of my lead characters who had difficulty having children. She eventually adopts a child and actually manages to have a child. This book is not published yet. But it's, yeah, and I it's something that comes back in a lot of my books, and twins, because I lost twins. I do use twins in my books regularly. So, and it's something that, yeah, it does come back. And most of my books are set in the Second World War, so there's a lot of loss going on in those books, and also how people deal with it. So you don't even realize you're doing it, but it is an outlet, and it's, yeah, again, another way of dealing with it. Creativity is a very good outlet for grief and for bereavement.
So you're saying it helps in many ways, really. It's a bit cathartic. You're
It's
writing
yeah,
things down.
it's cathartic, it's therapeutic to write these things down. Allow it to, you know, in my books, I allow what happened to me to happen to some other character, and watch her, watch them deal with it, as I've had to watch myself deal with it, and knowing they can move on, because I know that I've been able to move on with it. So
So that's interesting. So you're drawing on your own experience of
yeah,
loss and grief,
well, they
but
do say write what you know. So
yes.
I know a lot about the Second World War, so I have a lot of interest in that. And I know, yeah, you write things that you know. And I've got a cousin who's also a writer, who's gone through a divorce, another form of grief. His marriage is lost, and he's dealing with that through poetry. So, you know, it's everybody has something that works for them. It could even be something like somebody who wants to run a marathon. Just that's their way of dealing with it.
Yeah,
So
I've
it's,
had somebody on this series of podcasts who did exactly that, run a marathon after her dad died,
yeah.
partly for him, to remember him as a kind of memorial.
Yeah. And that's almost like, yeah, everybody has either a sense of creativity or, you know, some kind of goal that will help them move, make that move.
Sounds like a great combination because you've also got your experience here of dealing with people who are grieving, and you can bring that into your
Yeah.
books too.
Yeah. So it's a combination. Everything's a combination of. So
Well, you better tell me what the book's called.
the first book that I'm publishing with my publisher is called Attrick Water. Attrick Water.
Attrick Water.
Yeah, and that's one word. It's the surname of the lead character, and that's a Second World War mystery with a romantic twist, and that's going to be a trilogy.
And you've written more.
I've written four books altogether, but this is the first one that's going to be published. So,
And if people want to find it, they need to know your writing name, which is
Micah van der Vel.
Micah van der Vel.
Yeah.
And it'll be published when?
Next year.
So
So,
2025.
2025. I'm very lucky my publisher is also looking at the possibility of maybe getting it on TV.
Oh.
So, fingers crossed there. Let's see what happens.
That's exciting.
So yeah, it's very exciting. So
Well, best of luck with all of that, and thank you so
thank
much for
you.
sharing all that with us, Micah.
Thank you. I just hope that, you know, whatever I've said will be able to help somebody else as well. There's lots of people out there who go through this. Many people who, don't even realize it or don't tell anyone. And sharing is something that really helps. There are groups out there that are there to help you. It can be very difficult to make that first step to go to a group, to approach somebody. And sometimes if it's just friends they go to, sometimes the friends have already heard the stories and they've tried to give them people advice and it's not been actioned, so to speak. And it can be very difficult for the friends to help. So sometimes if you feel that if friends and family can't fully help, it would be worth trying these sort of groups. When you start voicing things, you might find that other people have gone through the same thing and you don't even know about it. So yeah, talking is very important.
Good advice. Micah, thank you so much for talking to me.
You're very welcome. Nice to meet you today.
Death is never easy, but there are ways we can help each other through it. And if you've found any of these episodes helpful, please think about liking and sharing. And if you can help spread the word by telling just one other person, thank you. And a huge thanks to Joe Barrett, without whom these podcasts would simply not be possible. You can contact us on hello@livingwithdying.co.uk.